That's Hank Mobley on tenor sax opening up on A Slice of the Top, the title track of his 1966 album. James Spaulding on alto sax, Lee Morgan on trumpet, Kiani Zawadi on euphonium, Howard Johnson on tuba, McCoy Tyner on piano, Bob Crenshaw on bass, and Billy Higgins on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. Still reeling from a stunning and unexpected defeat, courtesy Donald Trump, ex-presidential contender Hillary Clinton finds herself this week in the crosshairs of heavy artillery aimed directly at her, her husband Bill Clinton, and the foundation they operated as a charity that claimed to be doing good works all over the world, but really was a pay-to-play business enterprise that sold political favors and high-level access to individuals, corporations, and governments in exchange for hefty donations to the foundation. Several U.S. probes that were in play before Election Day have revved up their investigations, widening them to include donors themselves. Several foreign governments also have launched parallel probes of the Clinton Foundation's operations in their countries, and some international aid agencies are pressing for more detailed accounting of hundreds of millions of dollars that were directed at various charitable programs the foundation said it ran in some of the most distressed areas of the world. So we continue our series exposing how the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Foundation and its various affiliated pseudo-charities have been the hub of what former Wall Street financial analyst and leading expert on the foundation's operations, Charles Ortel, calls the largest unprosecuted charity fraud in history. Ortel blew the whistle on stock fraud on Wall Street prior to the 2007-2008 crash. The extent of fraud in the Clinton Foundation, he says, is of similar magnitude in the world of philanthropy. And with that, I welcome you, Charles.
Well,
you had a couple
so much,
of days
Eutrice.
Off. Of had a couple of days off here, so we're back in the swing of things.
Well, I'm delighted to be back.
I'm glad to have you. Now, let's talk about tomorrow. We are on the eve of a very significant turning point with regard to this foundation, and that is tomorrow. What happens tomorrow?
Well, foundations like the Clinton Foundation and its various affiliates, many of them have a calendar year end. That is to say, their financial year ends December 31st. And what the IRS allows you to do is turn in your forms, and they're extensive forms. Lots of detailed questions need to be answered. Lots of supporting exhibits need to be attached. The first filing deadline would have been May 15th, 2016, but charities as complex as the Clinton Foundation seldom make that deadline. So they're automatically granted an extension of 3 months when they apply for one, so they can push their filing back to August 15th, 2016 for the 2015 filing. After that period, they can ask for an extension, but the final deadline is November 15th, 2016, midnight, tomorrow. That's when all these returns have to be in for the Clinton Foundation, for its various entities, and for a large number of significant donors to these Clinton Foundation entities. Now, unlike your personal taxes, where you just fill them in, you don't have to get in the case of a charity, you have to get, when you're much smaller than the Clinton Foundation entities, up to their mammoth size, you have to get a competent accounting firm. You have to give that accounting firm license to go check your work, and they have to prepare what's called an independent financial audit. And that's not just a piece of fiction. There are strict rules involved in how you actually move to prepare such an audit, how you produce it, the information that needs to go in it, the work you need to do to check it. And it's very, very complex. And that work needs to be reconciled with what the foundation team would answer concerning its finances on the IRS forms. The risk here for the Clintons is immense. Last year, I warned the Clinton Foundation before around a year ago, before they submitted their forms, that not only would they have had to put in their forms for 2014, but that they should have amended all of their historical forms going back to the very beginning because they're all wrong. And instead of doing that, they hired an independent law firm, DLA Piper, whose partner, Lee Simon partner, was a recent hire to the team, who had previously served inside the Department of Justice overseeing whether or not these types of frauds should be prosecuted. And so she unwisely allowed her name to be used, saying that there was no issue here, that the Clinton Foundation didn't even have to refile. But then management of the Clinton Foundation last year said, out of an abundance of caution, we're going to refile certain years. So they refiled for 2010, 11, 12, 13, and filed their results for 2014. But these forms, unlike your personal taxes, all have balance sheets in them. And balance sheets, in order to be correct at the end of the year, have to be correct at the beginning of the year. So it was impossible, actually, to do what they tried to do, which was to only change a few years, going back to 2010. They really needed to go back, as I say, all the way to the very beginning and correct the accounting techniques that were used throughout and adjust all the figures that would have gone into the opening balance sheet December 31, 2009. And they didn't do that. So now there's a lot more interest in this. Now we know that the Clintons were not going to be sitting on top of the levers of justice and IRS, et cetera, in government. Now there's no real reason to protect them or fear them. And now they really do have to correct the record. And they have until tomorrow to do it, tomorrow at midnight. And they have until tomorrow to get a competent accounting firm to submit what is called an unqualified opinion. In other words, the accountants, they do it in a lot more tight language than I'm about to use, but they basically say, look, your books aren't cooked. They're not going to be able to say that. And they're not going to be able to say it credibly. And more to the point, big donors, and there are quite a few very sophisticated large donors, also have to get their own books worn off on by competent accounting firms. And if the Clinton Foundation's situation is as bad as I think it is, then numerous large donors face massive exposure if they go ahead and they continue to play along as co-conspirators in this illegal scheme.
Well, could you give us an example of such a donor that you have unearthed in looking through the records and what that donor's exposure might mean?
Sure. Be happy to. The biggest domestic donor with exposure is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Now, unfortunately for them, they have no excuses. They are the largest private foundation in the world. They have immense resources. They've been at this for a long time. They have made massive contributions towards the Clinton Foundation. Looking through the Gates Foundation books, which generally speaking are well done, you start in 2005, what you'll see is in most years, you'll see a pattern of grants to the various Clinton entities. I mean, you've got to look carefully. Their filings are very, very lengthy, in some years hundreds of pages long, and the type is small, and it takes a while to figure out and check that you've actually gotten all of the Clinton entities because they change their names so many different ways. But you'll find them. And when you do the math, the order of magnitude math on the known grants by the Gates Foundation to the Clinton Foundation entities, it's a number approaching $250 million U.S. dollars. And it's not one grant. It's certainly more than 30 grants. It might be 50, 60, or even more than that number of grants. So when a private foundation, which is what the Gates Foundation is, makes a donation to a charity, it has to check before it even considers making the donation, first of all, that the the Gates Foundation, has the legal authority to make the grant in furtherance of the purpose which it intends to help. It has to do that work. Then it has to check and make sure that the recipient charity, that is to say the Clinton Foundation, is validly organized and has at all times been validly operated. Because if the Gates Foundation makes a grant to something and calls it a charitable donation, and in fact the recipient is not a charity but an illegal or illegally organized entity masquerading as a charity, the IRS can punish the donor. Now, if it's just a one-off thing, it could be a small excise tax, a small fine on the foundation of like 20% the value of the grant. But if it's a repeated pattern of failures to do this work, and in this case, you're going back to 2005 for the Gates Foundation alone, the IRS would have the latitude to go in and, you know, assess a mammoth tax against the Gates Foundation or even to shut it down. Now, that's before you consider that it's not simply the Gates Foundation making grants to the Clinton Foundation. The Gates Foundation appears to have been very actively involved in 2009 and 10 in providing cover for what I believe was the illegal reorganization of the Clinton Foundation by creating a number of new entities without disclosing properly to the public and to the IRS and to other taxing authorities around the world the true history and the true reasons for this reorganization. Saving you the minutia, in brief, this thing was only authorized validly by the IRS to be a research facility and a presidential archive based in Little Rock. None of the other adventures, fighting climate change, fighting HIV/AIDS, curing obesity, none of these things, and there are many other initiatives, were ever validly authorized by the IRS in applications explaining all the defects in the operating record of the Clinton Foundation. It was never done properly. And so during 2009, the biggest piece of the Clinton Foundation was this HIV/AIDS initiative. We've talked about it in the past. It was far and away the biggest piece of the whole Clinton Foundation operation, but it was never validly authorized. So what did the Gates Foundation do? Well, the Gates Foundation had major league egg on face. They were, at that time in 2009, they had been very actively working for years with McKinsey. They had specifically been working with Rajat Gupta, who in 2009 began to become under suspicion and then investigation, ultimately for getting involved in insider trading, and he's then subsequently served time in prison. Rajat was on the advisory board of at least one Gates Foundation thing in India, as well as, I think, of the parent Gates Foundation committee, and he was actively involved in a number of Alive Ventures. And so his firm, McKinsey, was very active in this reorganization during 2009 and 10. Indeed, they seconded the leader of their philanthropic practice to be a trustee of this new and, I think, illegally created Clinton Health Access Initiative. Moreover, the biggest piece of the Gates Foundation now, and I believe then, was its health operation. And the superstar individual, and, you know, you run into people like this in life, at least occasionally in person, but certainly by reputation. You look at the resume of this gentleman. His name is Tachi Yamada. I mean, it's just amazing the level of accomplishments this guy has in the medical field and corporate world and philanthropic world. So he was running the biggest piece of the Gates Foundation. He agrees to serve on this Clinton Health Access Initiative and lends his name, along with a McKinsey partner, to a fraudulent application before the IRS to challenge the IRS, then run and or at least overseen in this department by Lois Leonard. So there's a lot to correct here. And one understands why they may have been skating, hoping that the Clintons to get elected, and then, you know, maybe this could all be papered over. But now it can't be papered over. And there are many other large private foundations that have made donations to the Clinton Foundation along the way when the Clinton Foundation entities, specifically the Clinton Global Initiative, which I think is not a charity, it's a business development exercise, the Clinton Climate Initiative, which is another business development exercise, and the AIDS Initiative, which is really a business, in my view, a business development exercise for the providers of generic HIV/AIDS medicines and for certain tests, the test kits. It is not a charity. So these large people, the Gates Foundation has the staff resources, it has the money to pay for lawyers. These are sophisticated people who should have seen this. And when you look at the degree to which they supported the Clinton Foundation and the many defects in the records that I see and that have been echoed in these internal reports by Kamika Gibson in 2008, by Simpson Thatcher starting in 2011, and by internal reports that have come out since then, you know, the Gates Foundation has no excuses. They should have seen this. Well, why did they not only continue, why did they escalate the volume and value of monies sent toward this illegal charity fraud network? Now, what makes this for them doubly troublesome is that moments ago, literally moments ago, the Gates Foundation announced, or at least there were reports in the press, that they are setting up yet a new operation that will solicit money from the public, the broad public around the world, I guess, to channel monies received into the programs that the Gates Foundation is advancing. In order to do that work properly, in order to continue with a solicitation of that scale, they must disclose the Clinton mess and their role in it. Because $250 million, if that's the correct number, out of the $2 billion declared during the life of the Clinton Foundation is a very serious material amount of funding. And indeed, when I first got on this case looking at it, I nearly didn't waste a lot of time on it when I saw that the Gates Foundation was such an important supporter, because my theory was, you know, Bill Gates and his team, his wife and Warren Buffett are among the most astute people on the planet, perhaps ever living, that have considered, you know, how to promote and run charities. For them to have made so many gifts said to me that, you know, maybe they see something I don't see, and maybe everything's just fine. But then, you know, I began to look more closely at it, and I began to appreciate that perhaps it was that the Gates people looked at this and said, you know, this Clinton team could be useful to us, and maybe we should support it, warts and all, and just, you know, continue as before. Let's not rock the boat. Besides, she might become president. Maybe that's the reason they play along. But with the Trump victory and with the fact that the House and Senate are now certainly in control of the other party, or the Trump's party, you know, now things change. The calculus changes a lot. And the longer you leave this mess uncorrected, the greater your legal vulnerability.
Well, this brings to mind a very important question. I mean, these donations by the Gates Foundation occurred over a period of years. So, and you said that the Gates Foundation has a reputation of being practically meticulous about its records and observing the law and so forth. So it absolutely must know that it is at the moment outside the law, because it didn't demand proof from the Clinton Foundation that it was within the law, that it had filed its papers, that it had accounted for all these hundreds of millions of dollars that it got from entities all over the world. So to my mind, then, if the Gates Foundation realizes that it's in trouble, big trouble, you said $250 million here in gifts to the foundation, the Clinton Foundation, then they would have to do something pretty drastic to protect themselves. And the number one thing that occurs to mind is maybe they will have to sue the Clinton Foundation to get their money back, saying they had no idea that the Clinton Foundation was being run so roughshod and had been outside of the law for so long. And now that they realize it, they just want their money back.
Exactly.
What do you think?
You know, when you go Exactly, Teresa. I guess since the last time we talked, you've been back to law school. Exactly right. The way this works, as I mentioned, the Gates Foundation is a private foundation, and they owe duties of care, loyalty, and obedience, the trustees do, under the law. They've got to make sure that the assets that are inside the foundation are managed prudently to serve the federally authorized and other government-authorized tax-exempt purposes in the legal documents. They've got to make sure they do that, and they've got to exercise prudent control over the day-to-day operations of this entity. And so, when you, as a trustee, discover that this sort of fraud and this sort of what is called taxable expenditures, the law provides that you actually absolutely must get this, do your level best to get the money back. And in a perfect world, you got to succeed at getting it back. Now, very often, it's not that easy to get money back in a situation like this because, you know, the principles around something like this can disappear, and their ability to scare up money to pay you back is, you know, can be non-existent. But in this case, for the Gates Foundation, there are so many wealthy trustees and there are so many financially solvent intermediaries, lawyers, accountants, who might be sued in addition to the foundation itself, that the Gates Foundation will succeed, I would guess, in getting the money back. And more importantly, you know, if I were a trustee of the Gates Foundation, and it's a closed circle of just, I believe, Bill Melinda and Warren Buffett, it's a very small board, I would argue it's not a good idea for it to be so small and so closely connected. But if there were a really tough board in there, one could reason it through and say, you know, on balance, yes, we look stupid because we're supposed to be pretty smart. We should have known better. We should have seen the perils in this sort of protracted support for what certainly looks now, in hindsight, to have been a political and personal slush fund for grifters. We should have seen this, but we missed it. And now to send a message to the world that you don't do this in charity land, to send a message that we're serious about being philanthropists, to send a message to the fraudster community at large that when you try something like this, you may think you're succeeding, you may even get away with it for 20 years, but when the reckoning comes, the reckoning is severe. On balance, as a guess, I would guess that the people around the Gates Foundation, in particular Bill's father, who I think is involved here, and others close to the Gates people, will look at this and say, you know, reluctantly we have to do this now, and we're going to do this, and we're going to win. Now, I'd cite one example that gives me some encouragement, and that is the fact that if you were to Google Petrobras, which is P-E-T-R-O-B as in boy, R-A-S, and Gates Foundation and fraud, you will see that the Gates Foundation sued Petrobras to recover $27 million. Here we're talking about $250 million, so almost 10 times as much money. And in the case of the Petrobras example, that was an investment made by their allied investment vehicle, the Gates Foundation Trust that holds the assets of all the, you know, that are used by the foundation. So that was a $27 million investment inside, I want to say, roughly a $40 billion pool of assets. So for the Gates Foundation to look at that example and say, you know, we need to sue over this, tells me that on roughly 250 million of cumulative donations to these vehicles over a long period, now 12 years or so, 10, 11, 12 years, you're going to do something about it. And I should bring up as well that the Gates Foundation was instrumental. Indeed, I think it's the only private foundation among a small club of governments that created something called UNITAID, UNITAID, which is the largest donor to the Clinton Foundation. That entity has given $650 million to the Clinton Foundation. And in a key period, 2006-7-8, about a majority, more than 50% of all the donations of UNITAID went to the Clinton Foundation HIV AIDS initiative, which is an illegal entity that was never, I don't think, validly authorized as a charity, but was held out as a charity and operated from a base in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts for a long period of time illegally until its license to operate was involuntarily revoked on March 31st, 2008. So you start looking into this, and there are, I believe, quite a few aggressive lawyers around the world who will look at this. And the more, once you reach the conclusion that I reached long ago, and once you start acting on it, and once governments start acting on it, then the house of cards comes crumbling down, and the final steps emerge. And those, for me, I think, you know, if I were in a room right now, I'm sure the clients, the principals at the Gates and the Clinton Foundation will be agonizing what to do. But I think the correct move for the Clinton Foundation, knowing what I know just from the outside, is that the entire board of the Clinton Foundation must be replaced immediately, and a conservator must be appointed immediately, an independent conservator, as was sort of analogous to the case with Madoff. That conservator must study the books and records of all Clinton Foundation operations around the world, reconstruct them. Then it must put together financial statements and the appropriate filings. And then it must throw itself on the mercy of the IRS and other taxing authorities around the world. And in addition to all that, what it must do is immediately cease fundraising. Immediately, because each additional dollar that the Clinton Foundation takes in, every additional dollar that it has taken in since the time I warned them and since the time they amended their returns, is a dollar solicited in a world of hurt. Because the record shows clearly that people knew there were concerns, and yet the trustees did not act on them. Instead of fixing the problems, they just carried on fundraising, carried on their wicked ways, using this supposed charity as a piggy bank for their personal and political enrichment.
So the lawsuit, hypothetically, by the Gates Foundation, not only is a way for the Gates Foundation to expunge itself from any possible involvement in a cover-up that they knowingly gave money to another foundation, another entity, knowing that it was basically afoul of the law, which would then now attach to them. So filing the suit is one thing to say, well, we get our money back, and this proves that our intent is to maintain some degree of transparency and honesty, and that we are not involved in the shenanigans of the Clinton Foundation. However, the demand will still be for $250 million that the foundation appears not to have, and it will start a cavalcade of others who, like the Gates Foundation, have come to realize that, you know, we got away with this stuff for quite a while, but it looks like there is a day of reckoning, and it's here. And we have to do everything possible to come out of this clean. So are they also likely to initiate lawsuits to get their money back? Or are they likely to maintain that they were duped and they gave money in good faith, but the foundation misused the money? And then the third piece of it is there's jail time here. There are criminal charges to be filed, because I'm sure a thorough investigation would concur with your findings that there is a relationship, a very profound relationship, between the donors and the benefits they got for donating, whether for speeches or for just plain use of the foundation. And that now brings back another level of criminality into play, having to do with the donors and the Clintons. So this is going to be a pretty nasty mess. And where will the money come from if the Clintons say they don't have it? They spent it all.
Well, the trustees, the former and existing trustees of all these Clinton entities, are on the line. And the accounting firms, I would argue, are certainly on the line. And Pricewaterhouse is a very large accounting firm, which probably has insurance. So I don't know about the law firms involved, whether they're on the line, whether you recover from them too. But there are enough billionaires and deep pockets around this Clinton mess that money will be recovered. It will take time, and it will be recovered. Now, just getting back to the first part of your question, there will be a class of donors who will potentially argue that they gave money because they saw the Gates Foundation giving money, that they invested in reliance upon the reputation, skill, wisdom of the Gates people to do their homework right. So whether that's true or not, there may be a bunch of lawsuits that would fly that way because, after all, the Gates Foundation is sitting there with $30-plus billion in the bank and, is an obvious target. So that's why it's so important, I think, for the Gates people to swallow the bitter medicine that they're going to have to swallow here and go after the Clintons with a vengeance. And their trustees, all of them, and just say, listen, we did our diligence. Here are our records. Here are the lies you told us. Shame on us for not catching this sinner. But we will not let this stand, and we demand our money back, and we're going to go scorched earth to get it back. Following that path, they might then, if it were me, you might consider, if I were doing it, you might consider saying, we'll pay the legal expenses for other aggrieved former donors who want to go down this path, or some sort of concession to try to get them on your side. But, you really do have to do this. And as you rightly say, in addition to the question of civil matters here, and that's what you're describing is all civil litigation, there are criminal matters afoot. I mean, supposedly there is at least one grand jury impaneled already. Supposedly there is a ripening IRS review. Questions now are being asked, in the parliament in Holland. And today we learned in the parliament the equivalent of a parliament, I think, in Switzerland. We know that there is a beginning investigation in the UK parliament, United Kingdom. And, before long, with each passing day, particularly as we see whatever we see tomorrow in these records, I mean, these records have to be disclosed to the public. The final deadline, we got to see them. So what are the accountants going to say? What are the numbers going to show? What is the litigation section of the disclosure in the audit going to show? There's a lot of information that will now fly out in the public domain, and there are a lot of hungry eyes looking at this, and the truth will out. So that's why I'm so delighted when you began the broadcast. You're absolutely right. This, everyone was focused last week on the election, and yeah, that was a major league set of issues. But this decision is also a very big set of issues. And here you have a former president, an aspiring president, operating as co-conspirators this scheme with their daughter for many years, getting away with it. And look at the long list of smart people who played along. For so long, why did they play along? Look at the long list of politicians and regulators who seem to have been asleep at the switch. Why did they go so easy on the Clintons? Was it because they felt that they get something back? And who's really at fault here? Now, why did the system fail so many donors? In addition to these sorts of general questions, I think they're public policy questions that need to be answered here. I mean, the world has changed a lot since 1998, 99, with the prevalence of broadband-based internet connections. These companies, these charities, they can operate with abandon around the world, and the regulators don't have the tools, it seems, to catch up to them. So maybe it's time, maybe there's a bipartisan thing that could be done next year to really look deeply at the regulatory apparatus that's supposed to regulate charities and companies, and try to see what the gaps are between, what can these charities get away with, and what does the regulatory apparatus have to do to keep them in check, and are there steps that we need to take to bring the regulatory world into 2017 you know, where it needs to be, or even into 2030 by 2017, so that it could anticipate and get ahead of and ideally curtail the degree to which charities are used in this fashion.
We have a vexing problem just the same, and that is that the books just don't add up. This is one of the things that you kept pointing out, that the money that came in and the money supposedly spent on these so-called charitable programs, it's just not lining up. Hundreds of millions of dollars are unaccounted for. Where did they go? And there still is no accounting as to where the money went. Do you think in this process, let's say that we have a long line of people now saying, okay, for whatever reason, but mostly self-defense, I want my money back. You took my money, and under false pretenses, you bamboozled us, and you got us to give all these hefty donations to support these programs. But the organization's own records, to the extent that we have them, are saying that the money that they publicly claim that they have spent on these programs actually wasn't spent on these programs. So when does the search begin in this whole process to find the missing money, where it went?
Well,
estimate that to be? What do you estimate that total to be?
All right, well, if we start with the declared donations of just the Clinton Foundation and its key entities, that's more than $2 billion from October 23rd, 1997 through December 31, 2014. And with whatever we'll find out tomorrow or whenever they actually do try to file their tax returns, let's call it $2.5 billion. And left over, they have a net worth of maybe $300 million, let's call it. I'm just guessing. So that means they took in $2.5 billion and they spent $2.2 billion. But certainly through December 31, 2014, there's never been an honest reckoning of the inflows and outflows. So the first step in a fraudulent charity is operating as this has operated, with no controls and no independent trustees and no serious accounting oversight. The first question is, how much money might have been sent towards the Clinton Foundation, but never captured in its declared info? And so there you don't really know. In these various internet-based solicitation campaigns for the tsunami in 2005, for Katrina in 2005, for the Gulf Coast Recovery Fund in 2008, for the Haiti thing in 2010, no one really knows how much money actually went towards those enterprises. We do know how much was declared. So, you know, I'd be speculating to say how much is involved just with those major initiatives. Then you get around some of the donors to the Clinton Foundation. I mean, the Unitaid money, it has very lax controls. And they do have reports and in quotes audits, but the audits for Unitaid, which is a large charity, are only done by the state auditor in one case of the government of India, and a set of audits is done by the state auditor of the government of the Philippines. So those are not really, you know, empowered massive firms capable of checking the internal books and records of Unitaid and its far-flung enterprises in parts of the world that are very, very tough to control and monitor. So when you start putting a more expansive net on it and saying, you know, it's the Clintons, it's the charities that they helped raise money for, and it's the multilateral aid organizations which sprang up around them and are working in tandem with them, just on the charitable part of it, you're talking in the $100 billion-plus area. And as far as what actually happened to the money, it seems the way this works, when you get into the big leagues on these multilateral aid games, the way they have been doing it is the aid organization will say, fine, I'm going to give, you know, Ivory Coast $25 million to fight HIV/AIDS. Ivory Coast, what you have to do is hire an accounting firm to account for the money that it gets dispersed inside the Ivory Coast. And there are several large firms, KPMG, they're the auditors for the Gates Foundation, Price Waterhouse, they're the auditors for the Clinton Foundation. Several of these very large accounting firms have a robust business doing that type of checking around the world, but it seems they're not doing a very good job of it. So the lawsuits ultimately, and perhaps, you know, where the pay dirt will come for getting this money back will be going against these accounting firms. Because you take an accounting firm like PwC, it actually needs to operate in countries like the UK, France, Spain, Australia, Ireland, United States, et cetera. And it would not be a good thing if the regulators in these big countries commenced enforcement actions against the firm itself for failures to, you know, for gross failures of conduct. That would not be helpful to their business. So as a guess, they would cooperate. And, you know, I think we're looking here, when it's all said and done, just on the charity piece of it, you're looking at a hunt for more than $100 billion. And then you get into the really...
$100 billion. Yeah, you said $100 billion, right?
Yeah, serious money. Well, that's not the serious money. The serious money then becomes, what about all the crooked schemes that were hatched around the Clinton Foundation? What about donors who gave money to the Clinton Foundation to get something back from President Obama's stimulus program, and our congressional stimulus program? It doesn't seem to have been particularly well controlled. You start looking at all that. You know, what about these green projects, you know, like Solyndra, where, you know, large sums of money just disappeared in thin air? You start really looking at that, and you start really looking at donors who gave money to the Clinton Foundation, gained access to big government leaders, and then through that access concocted energy deals and mining deals and forestry deals and telecom deals, and didn't explain that that's what they were doing, so that the various regulators could not tax the foundation for getting involved in what is called private gain. And to the extent it involves insiders in the foundation, enormous, which is the illegal appropriation by insiders of private gain. So you start getting into this, you know, with an empowered group of people looking for money, you could be talking into the trillions of dollars, not just $100 billion.
Wow. Okay, let's suppose that they do file some amended records, papers by midnight tomorrow. What will you be looking for?
I think the first thing I'd be looking for, because I am, you know, happy to confess that I'm a super nerd, is I would be looking in the footnote section of whatever passes for an independent audit to see what the footnote section claims they have actually done and considered as far as the legal existence of every Clinton entity, as far as lawsuits involving every Clinton entity. And I would be looking in the main body of the financial statements to see how many years, if any, have been restated. If we get tomorrow just the financial for 2015 and they don't correct any of the previous years, I can say with authority they are sealing their doom if they try that. Because there's no way that you could – I mean, the existing books and records are wrong. We know that from the internal – memos that have surfaced via WikiLeaks. We also know it just by comparing what they produced to the requirements. And from the WikiLeaks dumps, we know that the management and certain directors certainly knew that there were material defects in all these past filings. And I'm talking now about the ones up through 2009, which have never been amended. If they dare tomorrow to just simply correct 2015 or file 2015 without correcting these historical massive errors, you know, I think that defines reckless conduct. And when you get involved as a trustee in reckless conduct to the detriment of the public, you are looking at a very long prison sentence, if you know, if they decide to prosecute you and carry through the resources that would be needed here. Just ask. I mean, all you have to do is take a close look at what the government alleges Representative Corinne Brown has done with $800,000 and confirm for yourselves, you know, the prison sentence she gets if they win a conviction is, you know, many lifetimes in jail for $800,000. And then think about this being, you know, just the declared amount of donations, $2.5 billion. I mean, this is a world of hurt. And why, you know, why are they spending, you mentioned the amounts they spend, you know, why are they spending all this money flying around in private jets and staying in fancy hotel rooms and having, you know, banquets and meetings and having so many different offices when they really don't need all these offices? I mean, they have a gigantic complex in Little Rock. And why do they need 3 or 4 offices here in Manhattan when they have extra space in Little Rock? Doesn't make any sense. When you start looking at that, and then and all the money spent on consultants, you gotta, and if they don't devote the resources required to actually fix their filing, it's just flagrant and reckless behavior. And judges tend to look very poorly on collections of educated, powerful people who behave in this fashion.
What responsibility or what, how do foreign governments factor into this search for the truth about the operation of the Clinton Foundation?
Well, every foreign government takes a different approach. I've spent a lot of time in India on business, and so I'm familiar somewhat with the bureaucracies that exist over there. And there are at least 3 different major sets of laws that regulate charities in India, and they haven't been operating in India since 2004. And the way I read some of the law, I'm not obviously not a lawyer, and I'm certainly not an expert on Indian law, but the way I read the plain meaning of their statutes, the police constable in New Delhi, which is where I believe the New Delhi area is where the real Clinton Foundation charity is based. There's actually a real Clinton Foundation, and I think there's a fake Clinton Foundation in India that's a bunch of other fraudsters who've been operating over there. That apparently is a common problem in India, that you know, you'll have a real charity and a fraudster in some other part of the country will create, you know, there's the real Utrecht Lead charity and then there's the fake Utrecht Lead charity. But anyway, the constable has the right to walk in after dawn and before dusk and demand the records, check them, make sure that the records, you know, show that it's validly operated, and if it's not, to confiscate the assets that it finds in that office and then figure out what to do with them and how to dispose them over time. And I can tell you that when you get involved with the Indian government in a criminal matter, you are looking at a world of hurt. Similarly, in you know, in terms of the bureaucracy and, you know, the uncertainty and how the laws and regulations are actually enforced and the length of time, and you know, it's a nightmare. Other countries, the UK takes a very dim view of charity fraud. Canada takes a severe view of charity fraud. China as well. And you know what we have, taking a step back here around the world, I can't really think of a government around the world that's sitting there saying, you know, we have so much tax revenue, we don't know what to do with it. And we've got, you know, government, the cost of running this government just seem to go down every day. In reality, we have governments around the world facing declining tax revenues and increasing government costs. And so they're madly searching for extra revenue. And in this case, it's not a particularly fair fight when a government starts going after you for its money back, particularly if, as the Clinton Foundation does, if you have assets in these countries. For example, in the UK, there is a William J. Clinton Foundation in the UK that I would argue was illegally established there in 2007. And there's another one, Clinton Health Access Initiative Limited, I think, or something like that, in the UK. And many of these charities, in order to operate, and certainly to solicit inside some of these countries, we're supposed to set up legal entities. So when you're operating and soliciting in a foreign country, that's where you exist at the sufferance of that foreign country government. And, you know, it's quite possible that one or more of these governments would get very aggressive against the Clinton Foundation.
Well, people are watching Barack Obama and wondering whether he will pardon if Hillary and Bill Clinton and the foundation are found to be afoul of the law, that he will pardon them before he goes. Do you think that's even possible?
Well, I think it's possible that he might pardon them, but I think it's certain that a pardon would not insulate the Clintons from criminal and civil prosecution. The president's pardon powers under the Constitution, and it's even spelled out on, I think, the Department of Justice website, do not extend to crimes or to matters other than federal matters. Now, there are many federal potential violations or crimes here that I see that involve soliciting, using the telephone, using the Internet, using the mails across state boundaries while false and materially misleading documents concerning the charity have been in the public domain. There's a whole raft of potential violations that I would argue you could go after. There are many other violations of federal law. But unfortunately for the Clinton Foundation, there also are many, many violations I see here of soliciting within inside individual states, U.S. states, inside the Department of the District of Columbia, and of course outside our borders. And the President of the United States has no valid pardon power concerning state crimes or foreign, certainly concerning foreign crimes. So as I look at this, you know, even if you wanted to pardon the Clintons, I don't think Barack Obama can do it. And I think once you start opening that door, what you would very quickly find is that a pardon would have to be made not simply for Hillary, let's say, or Bill or Chelsea. What about all the other trustees? What about the past trustees? What about the executives? What about the accounting firms? What about the law firms? What about the significant donors who some might argue, like the Gates Foundation, were in a position to get inside, do their homework, and maybe force these people to mend their evil ways? What about all those people? And then what about the fact that if Barack Obama does dangerously go down the pardon path, unless we find out tomorrow, because his foundation also will report tomorrow if it complies with the law, unless we find out that he's already raised inside his own foundation the money needed direct the complex out in Chicago, where he's going to supposedly build his Barack Obama Foundation campus, unless he's already raised that money, he would have a very hard time, I think, soliciting funds from donors for his own library if he pardons the Clintons, especially considering that he's actually got a conflict of interest here because he and Michelle donated money to the Clinton-Bush-Haiti Fund in 2010. So he might try it, but it's not going to end well for him.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us today and bringing us up to speed on the Clinton Foundation. I hope people heard that figure, that when you put all of these benefits together, you're looking at $1 trillion, but at least $100 billion. This is unbelievable, and it's happening right in the open, and it has been given the sanctuary, essentially, a safe place in which to commit these crimes. So thanks again, Charles, for being with us and giving us some inside information. I'm sure you are waiting with bated breath for the records to be filed by midnight tomorrow. So we'll see.
Indeed.
Thanks so much again.
Indeed, Yatrice, thanks for having me on.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of our program. Stay tuned. Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuela is next. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think of this program and whether you're learning anything. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company.
Bye-bye.